So, the geometers had thrown a rock at us. Actually, a long rod of some dense metal, but in principle, nothing fancier than a rock. It penetrated a quarter of a mile into the solid cap of hardened lava on top of the volcano before it vaporized of its own kinetic energy, creating a huge burst of pressure that we knew as an earthquake. The pressure vented up along the wound that the rod had left through the rock, widening the hole as it roared out, founding systems of cracks that were immediately blown open by the underlying lava. This lava was wet, saturated with steam. The steam exploded into gas as the overburden was relieved, just as bubbles appear in a bottle of soda when the lid is removed. The lava, inflated by the steam, blew itself up into ash, most of which went straight up, which is why everything for 1,000 miles downwind ended up buried in gray dust. But some of it came down the side of the mountain in the form of a cloud, rolling down the slope like an avalanche, and easy for us to see since it was glowing orange. And once we had gotten over the shock of what we had seen and staggered back up to our feet after the leg-breaking jolt of the explosion and sprinted to the top of the ramp in a desperate mob, what we clearly saw was that this thing, this glowing cloud, was coming for us, and that it would simultaneously crush us like a sledgehammer and roast us like a flamethrower if we didn't get out of its path. The only way of doing that was to get on the aircraft, which had landed on the open slope between the walls of the Consent and the souvenir shop. There were exactly enough of these to carry the soldiers who had arrived in them, plus their gear. So they had chivalrously dropped their gear on the ground. They were abandoning everything they had brought with them, the better to carry passengers, avowed, away from danger. They were even flinging armloads of gear, fire extinguishers, medical kits, out onto the ground to make room for more humans. What it came down to, then, was a simple calculation of the type any Theor could appreciate. The pilots of the craft knew how much weight they could lift off the ground, and they knew how much a person weighed, on average. Dividing the latter into the former told them how many people might be allowed on each craft. To enforce that limit, the pilots had their sidearms out, and armed soldiers posted to either side of the doors. The soldiers, by and large, knew where to go. They simply returned to the same craft they had arrived in. The Orathenans swarmed, streamed, surged in the open spaces among the aircraft, tripping on or vaulting over abandoned gear. Pilots pointed at them one by one, hustled them aboard, and kept count. From time to time, they figured out a way to throw out more equipment and accept another passenger. This had already been going on for some time before Orlo, Saman, and I came running out the gates. Most of the places were already taken. Full craft were lifting off, some with desperate people hanging from their landing gear. The few who hadn't yet been chosen were running from one aircraft to another, and I was heartened to see that many were finding spaces. I saw Gunnell's and Yule's vehicles parked with lights on and engines running, but didn't see them. They must have made it. I had lost track of Orlo, though. A running soldier grabbed my arm and hurled me toward an aircraft that was revving up its engines. I staggered toward the door through a cloud of flying dirt. Hands grabbed me and hauled me inside as the craft's skids were leaving the ground. The soldier climbed onto the skid behind me. I spun around in the doorway to take in the scene below. I could not see Saman and I could not see Orlo. Good. Had they found places? Only two craft remained on the ground. One of them lifted off, shedding two Orathenans who pawed desperately at the frame of its door but couldn't get a grip. At least 10 other people had been left behind. Some sat despondently or lay crumpled on the ground where they had fallen. Some ran for the sea. One took off running toward the one remaining aircraft, but he was too far away. Some part of me was thinking, why couldn't they only have taken a few more? But the answer was obvious in the way my aircraft was performing. Engines screaming full tilt, yet gaining altitude no faster than a man could climb a ladder, and shedding a hail of small objects as people found odds and ends that could be hurled out the open door. A flashlight bounced off the back of my head and tumbled to the floor. I clawed it up and tossed it out,